Okay, let's get going. Welcome. Such a beautiful winter day. Works better when you plug it in. Anybody have any comments about last Thursday's lecture with the students with disabilities? Anybody have any comments, any feelings about what you heard and saw? It would be good for you to sort of access your feelings or practice doing that so that, because it helps with your communication skills. But
I was just going to say, it's very inspirational to see each of them speak and kind of present their talents. And, you know, they're each very talented in their own way. But what kind of struck me the most was that they each had a very good sense of humor. So even though, you know, they're a little different than us, they still manage to keep the same humor and find ways to look at the brighter side of things.
So you don't lose your sense of humor with a disability.
Right.
Anybody else? Anybody else have observations they'd like to share? And, you know, these are all successful students, too. I know Angelo has been involved in this course for 3 years in ME113, and so they succeed as being students and engineers, which is important. So, projects. For students working on individual projects, I really like you to let me know what kind of project you're working on. And these individual projects are for students who have signed up for one unit with a letter grade, and you know who you are. And I'll email you tomorrow as well to remind you. If you have any questions about your projects, please let me know. I've had a few discussions with some teams who said they've already done some brainstorming but haven't talked to the person who suggested the project. And there's a little bit of a hazard in doing that because, you know, you really should get a good idea of the problem and the need before you start brainstorming. Otherwise, you're going to start with a preconceived notion of what the problem is, which is the wrong way to go. So my suggestion is, as you get new information that may impact your brainstorming, so you may need to go back and re-brainstorm with that new knowledge. So please do that. How many people plan on using room 36 as a way to fabricate their project? I have the third column on the list here is for signing up for that, and the course will pay your expenses. So, but I need to know who you are and whether or not you want to use room 36. So the process here is to sign up at the web shop, and Marlo will step you through a 10-minute safety and lab orientation at the proper time. And once I have the names of everybody, I'll submit those and get your passes paid for. And as the hours are during the day and on the weekends as well, I should say that students already have a full PRL shop pass get into room 36 for free. So please note that so I don't, you know, double pay on that. Any questions? There's two events I want to bring to your attention. For both coming up in about a week and a half on Friday, February 4th. The Product Realization Network with Professor Rick Reese, who introduced himself on the first day of class. They're having their February mentor-mentee lunch. So it's free lunch. It's in the Peterson building. And this may be a good opportunity for teams who are working on projects to present them and solicit, you know, ideas as far as design and fabrication ideas as well. There's going to be a room full of people who have done this as their careers, so you'd be able to get some good information. I'm not sure, quite sure what room it's going to be in yet, because he was supposed to sign up for a room in Y2E2, and I don't know if he's got that yet, but I'll let you know. A second event on the same day is a talk by Alan Brightman and Victor Sarian. They're from Yahoo, and I've known Alan Brightman for a long time. He used to work at Apple, and he was the accessibility guru at Apple. So he'll be speaking at the ACM Tech Talk in Gates on Friday evening. And for students who are taking the course for, you know, lecture only for one credit, if you attend that, I'll give you credit for one class. I'll be there, so I'll see that you're there. So I would really recommend that you go to this to see how Yahoo is addressing accessibility. He's pretty much an innovator. I've known him for over 25 years now. So I want to talk a little bit about project expenses for students working on team projects. You know, the expenses are expected, should be working on the assumption that your expenses are going to be modest, a few hundred dollars, and that's what the course is willing to reimburse you for. If there's something else that you need that may cost more, please let me know. Get my approval beforehand. The guidelines for reimbursement, the items that are reimbursable include, you know, all your supplies, project supplies, parts, software, consulting services, shipping, tax, all of those have to be directly related to your project. I really can't allow things like personal computer upgrades or interest charges and credit cards, and no food or alcohol. Those are not reimbursable items. And anything that you're in question about, any part or any item that you want to get that you're unsure of, please talk to me first. I said I'm going to be able to reimburse shop fees for room 36. And also your travel expenses by car are reimbursable. I need a Google map that would have the start and end points and add 50 cents a mile. So if you're working in a project team, it would be good if one person was in charge of all the expenses, because it's just less paperwork for me to do if it's one person. If you need something that can be ordered via credit card, we can do that through a Stanford P card. You can also buy it on your own with your own credit card. And the important part here is to save all receipts, because you're going to be turning them in. You want to collect all your receipts, arrange them in chronological order, number them in chronological order, paste them on 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper, and send me a text document with justification for each item. And email the text to me and send and the receipts to me. And I think it takes a few weeks. Question?
Where should we get this down?
See me. I'll have to make sure. I haven't done that yet, so I have to make sure that I know the procedure. Any major equipment, like test equipment and stuff that you need, become Stanford property after the project, so that those need to be turned in. And you shouldn't be working with hazardous materials or chemicals in your dorm room or wherever. You need to be trained on using equipment. You need to have protection and, if possible, supervision. It's not a good idea to work with on your own with a lot of tools and stuff where you might might get injured. Any questions about that? I want to mention another topic. I've been asked on several occasions to provide letters of recommendation, and I think it'd be good to know from my end, you know, what I have to do to write a letter of recommendation so that you can do your part in making it easier for me. So typically, supposed to address the applicant's ability to pursue studies or research, and the ability to work with peer supervisors and subordinates. And also you have to indicate either in writing or by in a form the applicant's teaching potential, if it's for a teaching position, outstanding abilities and talents, liabilities and weaknesses, and oral and written communication skills, which is very important. So, you know, if you're just sitting in a class, a classroom here, I don't get a sense of how I can write a good recommendation unless I know more about you to do that. So, and I'm not sure I should be the person to write a recommendation at all because I'm not a tenured professor. So you should, you know, seek out people that can write good recommendations for you, and you should make it easy for them to write a good recommendation by working with the professor and getting, having the professor know you and have discussions, you know, all through your Stanford experience here. Then it becomes easier. I know for me, it's hard for me to comment on somebody I've only worked with for one semester, seen them maybe one time, one hour a week for 8 weeks. It's really not enough time to write a good recommendation. So if you need good recommendations, you need to do your work in making contact and working with professors. And you may not need a recommendation right now, but in the future you would, so it'd be good for you to start on that kind of relationship. Okay? I want to go back a little bit to success and failure. In one of my discussions, it was brought up that success and failure depends on the consequences. And if you have multiple attempts and on trying to succeed, maybe it isn't such a bad thing to fail if the result of that attempt is only just loss of time and you just have to do it again, okay? But if there's more at stake with the attempt that you're doing, you know, like you're launching a man into space or you're demonstrating your project at the final presentation and it doesn't work, you know, the stakes are higher. So what does this mean for you working on a project? Well, you should do all your failures right at the beginning when there's very little consequence to it. So do a lot of failures at the beginning, and hopefully that will lead you to success at the end. It would be wrong to, you know, only make it one long attempt and not planning for failure or success. So you want to do as much stuff as you can up front, right at the beginning, when it doesn't cost you a lot. Two of the students last Thursday were using this product called Braille Note, and I'm not sure you got a good sense of what it was. And this is what it looks like. There's actually a line of refreshable Braille displays. So these are a Braille cell is typically six dots, and these are usually raised when it's on paper, embossed on paper. But these are electronic Braille cells, so they have individually controlled Braille dots that can be raised or lowered. So as the user moves their hand over it, they can read the Braille, and you can change. You can read one line, then read the next line, and so on. So that's the display part. And up here is the input, and there's you can see there's a number of keys. There's looks like there's 8 keys here. And this is for entering Braille. Although the company does make versions of Braille Note that you can have an ASCII keyboard up there, and they also make a version that doesn't have a Braille display, but has just voice output. So these are very common, and these things have internet access and Wi-Fi access to them, as well as modems, and they can play music and play back audio notes and stuff like that. So it's a very handy device for people that use them. John? This is a one-line, 32-character refreshable Braille display. So you just the user would move their hands, their fingertips over that, and read the Braille.
Okay. The top part
is where it enters the keyboard part, and you enter it in a chord-like fashion. You can press multiple keys at the same time to represent the letters. There's even extensions to that we'll do on numbers and equations and music and math symbols and stuff like that. So the Braille is very flexible that way.
So it's primarily for writing Braille, like, you know, taking notes, or is it primarily for getting the prints converted to Braille?
Yes, all those. All those. People, users of this device can access the internet, read their email, stuff like that. So it's a very versatile tool. Question, Fred?
What's the basic model cost of
it? Yeah, I was afraid you were going to ask that. it's most probably over $1,000, but you know, you can look it up real quick. Just look up Braille Note. Okay, so let's do a little bit more of these who is disabled types of things. And as you recall, these are little segments to promote discussion. So I hope to hear some discussion. So we do this one at a time and try to figure out from the limited information one at a time if a person is disabled or not, if this person is disabled. And as you recall, disability is defined as a health condition that results in an impairment. So a young woman has a devastating car accident that results in a facial disfigurement. Well, that could be disabling, right? It's a health condition. But then she goes in and has plastic surgery, and when the bandages are removed, she appears beautiful. Wow, that's great. But it turns out, and this is from The Outer Limits, that she lives in a close society of disfigured people. So all of a sudden, she's in a minority, that she's different than everybody else. How many people remember seeing this episode? Yeah. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, was it scary for you? I still don't watch Outer Limits to this day because I remember how scary it was for me when I was a kid.
What was the point of having the surgery? Society to begin with?
Well, she was, her face was mangled, you know.
And that's okay.
Well, it was mangled in a certain way. John?
Did she live in a society before?
Yeah.
Why?
Why? Because it was on TV. It's made up. There is sort of another episode that's sort of similar to this, where a person is, you know, finds a way into this lost society, and in this lost society, everybody is blind, but he isn't blind. And so they find out about this, and they actually surgically remove his eyes so he can be like everybody else. I think it was The Outer Limits or Twilight Zone, you know, one of those scary shows, science fiction theater. They're all like black and white shows from the days where everything was in black and white. Okay. Who is disabled? Superman. Superman disabled or not? These are sort of contrived, but, you know, again, it's for discussion purposes. Well, nobody would consider Superman as being disabled unless he's sitting next to a piece of green kryptonite. So what can we What can we say about this?
Timmy's just normally evil.
No, he's worse than he is. He can't move. Look at him. He's in agony. Right? He can't move. He can't do anything. Are there times that you feel like Superman? Or are there times that you feel like you're Superman's sitting next to a piece of green kryptonite? Yes?
When?
Yes. Yep. That's yep. And certainly, you know, you could so this is a temporary condition, sitting next to green kryptonite, you know, hopefully. And allergies are come and go, right? And you can think of injuries, you know, where you break your leg or you have to use crutches for a while, and so you're temporarily disabled. Okay. So even superheroes can be disabled. There are situations where superheroes are disabled. Okay, the last one is an able-bodied, intelligent child of ethnic descent. I'm not saying where she's from. She could be from another planet. But she can't get a decent education because of the situation where she lives. Is this a disabling situation? Yes or no? What do you think?
Economic status and worldliness and gender as health conditions.
Ah, that's right. That's right. So this is a societal-based disability, so to speak, but we were talking about health-related aspects of being disabled. So that's exactly what I wanted. And there's actually a true situation that of people in, I think it's Afghanistan now, that where only boys are allowed to go to school. So if you happen to be a girl, you're sort of, you've lost the opportunity for an education. Unless, and this is true, unless your mother dresses you up as a boy and you go to school disguised as a boy. So that's sort of a weird way around that. Any additional comments?
A lot of times in this scenario, there's also poor rural involves malnutrition, which then actually is, this child is not that intelligent because they didn't have vitamins and iron.
And maybe they weren't socialized, you know, as well.
Right, but you know, there's a lot of studies that are showing that if you don't have these vitamins and iron in your diet, your brain just doesn't really.
That's right.
Do what it ought to.
So that can result in a physical disability.
Yeah.
So that would be a health condition. Very good. Okay. So next Tuesday, at this time, the class has a tour of Willow Garage in Menlo Park. It's not very far from here, and as you recall, Willow Garage is makers of some pretty state-of-the-art robots, and we have a chance to visit them to see their robots, and they're also looking at the applications of their robots for people with disabilities and seniors. So we're going to get some demos, and they're going to be talking about that, and Steve Cousins, a Stanford alumni, will be our host. There's a sign-up sheet over here for this, I think. We have a limit of 50 people, so I like to have students get the top priority. And any spaces that are left, we can have community people. And in order to facilitate logistics, I have a number of sign-up sheets for drivers here. So if people who have a car, they have spaces in their car, are willing to drive, please sign up here. Indicate, you know, your name, cell phone number, number of passengers you can take, and where you can meet people and what time. And then there's a column here for passengers, so passengers can sign up. Probably be good for all the drivers to sign up first, and then the passengers can select the proper ones. So there are several several sheets of that. And then on the back here, there are some maps of where Willow Garage is. They're just on the other side of Elma, off of on Willow Road, off of Middlefield Road. How many people are planning to go for the tour? Okay, great.
It's not the Palo Alto.
It's in Menlo Park.
Yeah. People need to know that they can't just turn on Elma and drive to.
Right, that's why I have the maps.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. So please sign up afterwards. Okay. So Thursday.
Susan?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's, let's see, what's around there? It's sort of near where
Sunset
Magazine has their campus there. Okay. Excuse me? Yeah, I want to meet at there at like 4:30, and I'm sure we'll go over. So if you have to leave early, please feel free to do so. But I think it'd be pretty interesting. So if you can, spend time there, that would be great. I've been there a number of times, and the robots are awesome. So it'd be interesting. So on Thursday, we'll have Bill Geary. He's a colleague from the Smith-Pedewall Research Foundation up in the city, and he's worked for over 30 years as an engineer looking at assistive technology for people like him who are blind in classroom situations and navigational type of situations as well. And he's going to bring bring boxes of stuff to show off, and it ought to be pretty interesting. He's a character, so it'll be fun. But today we have Elena Times. She's the former chair of Mountain View's Senior Advisory Task Force, the current chair of the Housing Action Group of Santa Clara County Aging Services Collaborative, and a member of the Silicon Valley Leadership Group's Housing Group. She received a BA from Stanford, so she's an alumni. Way back when, I think I'll skip the date.
Okay. We have our 50th reunion coming up.
Okay. Well, that sort of narrows it down.
Yeah.
An MBA from Pepperdine and an MA from the University from USC. So please welcome Elena Times. Let's put this out first.
Okay.
Clip that someplace.
How about right here?
Okay.
Actually, it's going to have to go. Well, no, it works. Thank you. Yeah, I think I'll just pull this chair out. Great. I have a love affair with what Stanford is doing in the area of out-of-the-box thinking about applications of technology. And I have been annoyed at the way that other campuses on the West Coast have not taken to this. And have thus been delighted when Stanford started doing something in this area. About 2 years ago now, I co-taught Agile Aging at Stanford after peppering the instructors for about 6 months to let me in and let me help. And we had a great time. The course is no longer being offered, but the ideas are continuing to turn up everywhere around Stanford. So why am I here? Well, first of all, I have a passion for seniors and aging. Now, this is not a lifelong passion, but I are a senior, as you might have guessed. We will come back to Stanford next October and be as rowdy as 70-plus-year-olds get, but we will do our part. I developed a passion for seniors when my mother was dying, and I realized that I would wind up as top of our family pyramid, if you will, and I had no idea, no roadmap as to how it is that you are a senior. And I started researching things on the net and bumped into a course, an online course in sociology that is offered through Trinity College in Houston. And from there it was just continue to research. Well, that particular roadmap has gotten considerably more complex. There's a lot of stuff out there now. But that led me eventually to getting to the point where I figured I needed a structured program to help me refine the research, or I would wind off going off in too many directions. So I wound up getting an master's degree in gerontology from USC while sitting at my computer at home in Mountain View. Online learning works. From there, I decided to get active in the local area, and as my resume says, I have been very active both in the county and in Mountain View where I live. One of the people who sits on the Senior Advisory Committee in Mountain View with me is here today, and he can probably tell horror stories about the way I have run things thus far. But we are making progress. We are making a contribution to seniors and their life in Mountain View. Among other things, I have developed the maxim that I believe that it's important that seniors recognize, and everybody else recognizes, that seniors are a vital and vibrant part of the community. They are frequently marginalized. They are forgotten. They are tossed into, if you will, the scrap heap of our society because they no longer work. Well, believe me, they will continue to exist, and they will continue to make an impact. And for that reason, they need to be paid attention to. So my talk today is going to focus on seniors and who they are and some of the demographics about it, not just nationally but locally as well, and the kinds of things that they need. I have long had a background in technology. I have been an explainer of technology for about 40 years now, and have written 35 published books, mostly on software. You can Google me and find all sorts of books that now have more antique value than current value, but that's my name. I also have one of the senior problems, which is a disability of my own. I have two fake knees, one of which has never healed. I had arthritis, and it was severe enough to cause the knees to be replaced. I am a fan of artificial joints. I just wish that the thigh muscles on one leg had reattached the way they're supposed to. I'm going back in for surgery sometime in the next couple of years to fix this problem. I also learned a great deal about how students learn and mislearn from agile aging, and I wanted to correct some of the things that were done in that class, not because what they did was bad, but because they simply had not had the experience of teaching the class before. So, to that end, I would like to address a little bit about the process of innovation. There will be a link on the course material to an article that I just discovered called Innovation as a Learning Process, Embedding Design Thinking. It will encompass some of the things that you are doing in the early part, but it mostly addresses what happens after you leave the class, not just going into business, but the whole innovation process. I recommend this article highly. You'll have a link when you leave here. And with that, I'd like to go on to what I'm about. What we're going to talk about today is the scope of the problem and assistive technology as it applies to seniors. I will be talking about the senior population boom, which many of you have heard a lot about. I will be talking about how seniors live and the various options that are available to them. I will be talking about how assistive technology can help. One of the things that we need to first... knees are gone. I'm going to sit down. Got it. Just me being clumsy. One of the things that we have a problem with in this country is deciding who's an older adult. If you want a golden pass from the park system, you only have to be 50. If you want to get on Medicare, you have to be 65. If you want to get on Social Security, you can start collecting when you're 62. When you walk into Fresh Choice, if you look like you're over 50, they will offer you the senior discount. There is no agreed upon definition of what it is to be senior. The senior discounts can depend. The senior discount that you get at AMC movie theaters is for an age lower than what Medicare requires. So, you know, what is a senior? Generally speaking, those who are 55 and older are referred to as boomers. The baby boomer generation is usually defined as those who were born between 1946 and 1964. And the first of them has started turning 65 this year and are starting to collect Social Security and Medicare. But if you are 60 plus, you are a target for the Older Americans Act. At 65, you're eligible for Medicare. And at 75, you are part of the GI generation, which preceded the boomer generation and has a completely different outlook on what it is to be a senior. And at 85, you become the fastest growing segment of our population. I need to tell you that I am waiting with bated breath for last year's census data. It's not out yet. I checked. When it comes, we are going to be able to talk in a great deal more detail about what it is to be a senior and all the things that affect their lives. Right now, we can't. So let's talk a little bit about some national data. In the U.S., we have about 16.3% of the population who are older than 60. In California, it's only 14%, and in Santa Clara County, it's only 13%. If you look down at the 85-plus population, these are, again, percentages of the whole. One thing that you need to bear in mind is that the 85-plus segment has been growing almost exponentially over the last decade. I cannot wait for this year's census data. Yes?
So 34.9
million, 12.4%,
that's
the whole population. Yeah. I'm sorry? No, that's of the whole population of the U.S. The California column is of all of the population in California. And of Santa Clara County, it's of the percent of population of all of Santa Clara County. So here's some projections, and I want you to be as scared as I am. If it can be assumed that those over 65 are no longer working and therefore are no longer contributing to taxable earnings, which of course keeps the country running financially, look at the population of people who are going to be 65 and over out to the year 2050. Remember that these people are, A, the greatest consumers of medical insurance and medical care dollars spent in the United States. B, they have as a guaranteed income the amount that they collect from Social Security, which is not and was never intended to be the sole source of their income, but it's getting more so because of the fact that the recession has knocked out anywhere from 30 to 60% of the retirement assets of those 65 and over. And they are in the process of scrambling to rebuild their private portfolios. But frankly, with the economy not behaving too well, it's going to be hard for them. How would you feel if you were faced next year with the prospect of your income being reduced by about 60%? Could you continue to go to Stanford? Could you get a job? Could you work? Could you support a family? Of course not. These people cannot, or theoretically cannot, work. Watch for most of them to come back into the workforce because they have to. Now, these are people who are no longer as nimble as most of the people in this class. They have health problems usually, frequently multiple health problems, and they have a sense of responsibility at a time when they thought they were going to have time off. Talk about broken dreams. Here is just a little thing that's interesting in terms of ethnicity. Notice, of course, that the national population projections show the number of older people growing dramatically by the year 2050, but the Hispanic population is growing as well. The multi-race population is actually growing more than it looks like here, but it's just statistically the numbers are still pretty small. Senior households. What is particularly interesting here is the number of female-only householders. In other words, they are either living alone or they are living in a household that is all females. Or at least they are head of house for that. Curiously enough, a large number of these people are grandparents, and they have physical custody and responsibility for their grandchildren. And the reason that that has happened is because too many of the adults who were parents of these grandchildren have been strung out on drugs or other kinds of health problems, and they are no longer fit to take care of their own children. Therefore, the grandparents have stepped up to this. That is a relatively little known factoid that I would like you to burrow away in terms of how it is that people who are supposedly retired are going to spend their, I quote, golden years, unquote. This was true from the 2000 census and with an estimated update from 2008. Not too many people actually live in the poverty poverty level. That has changed, but we don't have hard statistics yet. Watch for the current census to come out with data that will show this in more detail. I have heard rumors that this figure is going to jump over 10%. That's a dramatic change from trends over the last 20 years. Here's some California data. 3,595,658 were over 65 in the year 2000. That is moved up to 5.5 million in 2005 who are 60. 16% of the Californians will be 65 and older in 2010, or would be. That was, again, a projection for 2009. And we're going to have 8.7 million who will be 60 and older in 2020. Notice that we have an increase of 59% change in the 60-plus population in California by 2020, and an expected growth of 4.7% between 2000 and 2030. Why is this important? Can anybody tell me why this would be important? I told you part of it, but I'd like to hear some guesses on your part. Why are these figures important to know? You don't have to know the real figures, but what do the trends tell you? Yes. What sectors? And where does that money come from? Working people, right. Okay, some of those people over 60 will be back in the workforce. I'm one of them. Most of those people think that they can stay retired. Let me tell you about trailer living. No, I don't have to. Okay, somebody else had another question. Yes. Will there be a Social Security issue? You think? Of course. There already is a Social Security issue. There's a hand over here.
I have a question. How does it compare to the percent change of the total
population? We're outstripping the rest of the population. The birth rate in this country is slightly below 2 children per family. It is different for immigrants, but for the most part, they're not offsetting the rest of the population. There's been a significant rise in the number of women who are choosing not to have children at all. There's been, and you will probably see statistics for this, a rise in the number of single female households. They don't want children. They like being single. Okay. Yes.
Does that put more women in the workforce?
Yes, I think so, whether they want to be or not. Any other questions? Any observations? Okay, just stew with this for a while. This is just to whet your appetite. These figures are available from the State Plan on Aging, from the California Department of Aging, which, by the way, has been proposed to be eliminated. In other words, the whole California structure that is going to take care, that has been taking care of the aging in California and handling the administration of all the federal funds that come to California, that's going to be no longer around, says the most recent Brown proposal. I think that's a little dangerous. We also have these big debates going on in Congress about a balanced budget, and the number one issue that comes up, number two, the two issues that come up are expenditure, government expenditures on Medicare and Social Security. And yet, as you probably have heard, touching either of those programs is like the third rail, the electrified third rail in a subway. You touch it, you die. It is well known that of all the interest groups, all the pressure groups in Washington, D.C., the single most powerful is AARP. It is also known that seniors vote in greater proportion to their numbers than any other age group. You piss off an elderly and they're going to get you. Okay. Here are some California projections. And by the way, California is not the preferred destination now for seniors. Preferred destinations are Florida, always, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, and to some extent, Arizona. California isn't quite as popular a destination anymore because it costs too much to live here. Nonetheless, this is what we've got to work with. So you can see what the increase is like in the 60 to 64 age group and in the 85 group. 205% increase. That's amazing. Are we ready for that? All in unison now. No! All right. Who makes up our senior population in California? Here you see that the percentage of people who are in this group are mostly white. But, they are not mostly white. They are Hispanic and Latino. And the whites are, the whites are actually only about third on this particular population graph. That situation is going to get worse as the current Latino population, not worse, it's going to, well, okay, there will be less whites in that population now, in the future than there are now, and more Latinos in that group. I don't consider that necessarily worse. It's just different. Any questions? Okay, some more things about... I think we just did this. Okay, some other California tidbits. I don't need to do this. Of those seniors who have a high school diploma or higher, they're 70%. Those with limited English proficiency, 17%. Those who are Medi-Cal beneficiaries, there's 20%. What's the difference between Medi-Cal and Medicare? Who knows? No. What's the difference? Anybody else got a guess?
Medi-Cal is for low-income.
Thank you. Medi-Cal is for low-income people. Okay. The current grandparents responsible for the basic need of their grandchildren, that's almost 300,000 people who are having full-time care for their grandchildren, frequently on Social Security and Medicare and whatever income they can scrape up. They might get supplemental income from the state of California as long as the current budget proposals don't go through. Californians 75 and over with a driver's license, 60%. Is that scary? Tell me why or why not. Why would it be scary? More accidents? Who else has an idea? Reaction time issues and vision issues, okay. Particularly night vision. Anybody else got a guess? I'm sorry? Yeah? They have a lot of fatal accidents. Some seniors drive into farmers markets. Some seniors cannot tell when there's a car coming and they will turn into it. Some seniors get confused. They run red lights. They don't react as fast. Are they the worst population group in terms of accidents? No, why not? Who is it? Teenagers. Your group, right, okay. We may be older, we may be wiser, we just don't move as fast. Okay. Some Santa Clara County data. Here's, we are at the moment about 1.6 million. This data, incidentally, was part of a presentation that I did last fall for the Aging Services Collaborative. And this information is included as a reference on the lecture materials, and you're welcome to go plow through it. Of those who are 55 and older, it's almost 300,000, and they make up 17.6% of the county population. Santa Clara County is not the county with the most seniors. Where do you think the most seniors are located in California? Anybody? What?
San Diego.
You're right. Next, where else?
Orange County.
Yes. If you look at this, the map, you can look at the county aging area plan on aging, and you can see where we are. The Bay Area is still attractive, but it's not as attractive as Southern California, and the reason is money. It costs more to live in the Bay Area than it does in most other parts of the state. Here's some Santa Clara County projections for those who are 60 and over. By the year 2020, we will have over 2 million in this county. Where are we going to put them? We will have 428,000 who are, the total population is going to be over 2 million. We will have 428,300 seniors who are 60 plus living in the Bay Area in Santa Clara County. And the problem for them is, where are they going to live? Most seniors do not want to live in two-story houses that are out in the boonies. Can you tell me why? Stairs. Good one. That's the biggest single reason. Why else? Because their kids have taken the car keys away. They cannot, therefore, drive to the grocery store, to the post office, to doctor's appointments, down to get a haircut, or to visit people, or to go to the movies. If you can imagine, let's think about my little town called Mountain View. Mountain View has two axes, one of which is El Camino, and that runs... Okay, are you all familiar with the term logical north and south? Okay, all right. It runs logical north and south. Okay. The other one is Grant Road, which is the extension of 237, which runs logical east and west. The area around El Camino, for about a mile on either side, is Mountain View between Palo Alto and Sunnyvale, or roughly between San Francisco Creek and Stevens Creek, roughly. Give me, you know, some give and take on that one. The area along Grant Road is about a mile wide total before it runs into the Los Altos border on one side, and depending on it, either the Los Altos or Cupertino or Sunnyvale border on the other side. The El Camino corridor, actually the El Camino direction, is served quite well by Valley Transit. There are buses in parallel all over the place. The area going up Grant Road is served by a single bus route, which runs maybe once an hour or on demand. And VTA is constantly adjusting the demand. Most of the houses in the area along both sides of Grant Road are two-story houses, two- and one-story houses, occupied largely by either yuppies with children in the best schools in the city or by people whose families have grown and left. And of those houses, most of them are occupied by single widows. They like the house. They like the neighborhood. As long as they have a car, it's great. But a lot of those women get older and can no longer and should no longer drive. And once they do, they are imprisoned in their own houses. Then what do? Well, Valley Transit doesn't really go off on side routes. They go up and down Grant Road, and you've got as much as 3/4 of a mile hike to the bus stop when the bus stop comes. There are some private transit services for instance, going to the hospital. There are some county-sponsored vehicle services where for $2 or $3 or $5, depending on the service, if you are not disabled, you can get a ride in a car to go where you want to go. However, the window for pickup is 45 minutes on either end. So wherever you want to go to visit your doctor, you add an hour and a half to either end of your trip. That'll chew up your day. If you're disabled, you can get a ride for $2 to $3. Roger, what is it these days? $4, I'm sorry, to get a ride where you want to go, so long as it is in the county. And the county stops at the border here. And that means if you want to go over the border to anything in Menlo Park, such as the Menlo Medical Clinic, you get to create another ride picking up whatever San Mateo County's version is at the Palo Alto train station so that you can finish the ride into wherever you're going in Menlo Park. Tell me that's a little complex. Sometimes it's above the ability of seniors to simply work out the logistics, and they just give up, which is one of the reasons why an awful lot of seniors don't get the medical attention they need, simply because the process of getting there is too difficult. Now, these are things that statistics will infer. You can check this out if you want to, but it is a common problem. Next to housing, by the way, if you ask a senior what are the things that matter in their life, things that they would like fixed, first one is housing, second one is transportation. Beyond that, there's a gulf until they come up with smaller things. But housing and transportation are two huge needs, not just in this county, but all across the country. Okay, some other Santa Clara County data. 9,500, or 20% of the 65-plus population in Santa Clara County, are grandparents, and they are responsible for their children. And they are all over the county, all the way from rural Gilroy, all the way right here into Palo Alto. Linguistically isolated households means people who speak a foreign language at home and do not speak English. We have a lot of them. I'm sorry I couldn't expand the graph itself, but it means that 11% of the Santa Clara County total population live in linguistic isolation. And yes, an awful lot of that is Hispanic, but a significant portion is also various kinds of Asian populations. 40% of those who are 65 and older live in linguistic isolation. That doesn't necessarily just mean Chinese. It includes a significant number of Indians. It includes a significant number of people from Malaysia, from Vietnam, from Cambodia, people who came over based on the fact that their families were able to come over and then bring them back. So let's talk a little bit about some health data, and particularly about disability. In 2000, you can see where most of the disabilities were. This is changing, however. In California, those 60 or over, 42% had one form or another of disabilities. Now, sometimes that's limiting and sometimes it's not. Let me run an experiment on you. This is an aspirin bottle. Thank you, David. It's, you know, about an inch across. Now, imagine you have one of these in your hand. As a matter of fact, here. Oops, I'm sorry. Pass it to the guy over there, would you please, to him? Wrap your hand around it. Okay, all right. Okay, with you. No, just where you are. Okay. Now, imagine that your hand is frozen around that, because that's the way arthritic hands do freeze. Okay, now, without the pill bottle, but nonetheless, your hand is frozen in that configuration. How would you drive? How would you drive? What? With the other hand, okay. How would you type? One-handed. How would you manipulate a doorknob? One-handed. How would you brush your teeth? Okay, how would you get dressed? It would be difficult, wouldn't it? Okay, if you've got anything with you, even a pen or pencil, wrap your hand around it for a minute. and imagine your hand is frozen that way. How are you going to do things like fixing meals? How are you going to handle your digital telephone? Presumably it's a smartphone and you have to tap the face of it every now and then. How are you going? Yeah, right, with your thumb. Okay. It's going to be really difficult, isn't it? Okay, let's try another little experiment. This, incidentally, is a limiting disability. It means you functionally can't do an awful lot of stuff. Okay, toss that over to David. It was his. Okay, try another one. Put your foot out. Straighten your leg. Okay, imagine you have a splint on it. Tell me how you're going to ride a bicycle. How are you going to do that? Yeah, with your hands. Yeah, right. How are you going to ride a bicycle with one foot? You're going to get in the car, right? Yeah. Okay, let me tell you, this campus is not very friendly to people in cars. Never has been. Okay, how are you going to get up and down stairs? The answer, with difficulty. How are you going to do things like get yourself onto the toilet? Again, with difficulty. There is a reason for grab bars in a bathroom. Believe me, if you have limitations on your legs, you will need the grab bar to help you get up and down off the toilet. Believe me. Okay, these are disabilities that are not life-threatening necessarily, but they can be because it means that your whole sense of balance and your ability to get around is functionally limited. That's what a disability is. Now, David has spent a great deal of time discussing what is and is not a disability. This was just a little bit of an exercise, but I wanted you to understand why 42% of people who are older have some form of disability. Okay, I'm not going to read these because you have the slides or will have the slides and you can read them themselves. These are problem areas that need to be addressed, and I'm going to get to the reason for this. Actually, I'm going to skip over this one, too. The cost for providing health care for a 65 American is 3 to 5 times greater than the cost of those who are, for someone who is less than 65 years. And it is a fact and has been for about 20 years that the single most expensive year for health care is your last. Of interest on this particular slide is the fact that the top 4 things that kill us, heart disease, cancer, stroke, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, are the same for the United States and for Santa Clara County, but then it changes. Unintentional injuries can be things like falls down these steps because you have a leg in a splint or you have bad knees. Of particular interest is that number 7 is Alzheimer's disease. Watch for this to increase. Alzheimer's currently, of those who are 85 plus, 35% have some form of dementia or Alzheimer's. It starts showing up at age 50 and it gets progressively worse. The average lifespan for somebody with Alzheimer's is about 10 years. There is no cure. And we are looking expectantly to Stanford University's researchers to come up with better detection and better treatment options, but they aren't there yet. I'm running out of time. I have 10 minutes to finish this up. In California, of those who are 55, 1 in 8 will develop Alzheimer's disease. Of those who are 55 plus, you will develop a 1 in 6 chance of developing some sort of dementia. By the way, what's the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's? Alzheimer's is one kind of dementia. Dementia is kind of an uber class that includes things like the dementia that comes from Parkinson's, that comes from chronic alcoholism, and comes from a number of other very small kinds of things. But by far, Alzheimer's is the most common kind of dementia. By the way, you won't get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's if you're in a hospital setting. What you will get is a diagnosis of dementia. And the reason is that there is no way to confirm the presence of Alzheimer's right now that is approved is clinically approved without an autopsy. So they can simply say you have dementia, but they cannot necessarily say for sure that you have Alzheimer's.
the best way to detect Alzheimer's right now is strictly behavioral, which is a shame. Okay, more things. Falls. Falls are the leading cause of injury-related death and the most common cause of hospital admissions and trauma. And an awful lot of those falls are done by seniors. I'm not going to go on with this one. Senior housing. Okay, I have 7 minutes. The most desired kind of housing for seniors is owner-occupied. It can be a single-family residence, a condo, a mobile home. Usually there are no services associated with it. Sometimes there's social if you're in a group setting like an apartment building. There's open market rental, either apartments or senior-only facilities. There are co-ops. What is a co-op? A co-op is when everybody in the building jointly owns the company that owns the building, and you pay dues, which look like rent, in order to occupy a single unit. Co-ops are much more popular in San Francisco than they are down here. There are affinity or interest-based group living situations that can be either equity interest or rental. But for the most part, seniors want to stay in their own home, whatever their own home happens to be. And it can be either groups or individual. I can't really go... let me run down this. The kinds of options that are available for seniors are age-restricted buildings, mobile home parks, things like that. Most of those do not have any kind of services, and that's a problem for seniors. There are non-profits who offer services. Many of these are government-funded. Some of them are other-funded, such as church or service groups. There are assisted living facilities, which you go into when you can no longer live on your own and you need help to do things like getting up and out of bed, going to the bathroom, fixing your own meals, light housekeeping. There are continuing care or life care facilities, and we have several of them right around here, where you go in once and you go out on a stretcher. They provide everything depending on what you need, but it costs, the more you need, the more that you have to pay. And then there are residential nursing facilities. Everybody wants to stay out of those if they can. They're not hell holes. They are just, you know, you go in there because you are totally dependent on someone else to take care of you. Many of this is actually done at home by, statistically, it's usually the oldest daughter in the family who then has to give up her job in order to take care of the elder person. There is not a big difference between nonprofit housing for seniors versus nonprofits for families. In Palo Alto, we have some age-restricted housing for seniors. We also have some restricted housing for families. Functionally, there's not a whole lot of difference. The biggest difference seems to be who pays for it. And there's a big change now coming in senior preferences as to where they want to live. Most of them don't want to live out in the boonies, and in fact, they don't even want to live at the beach anymore or in the mountains, even though that's a pipe dream while they were getting towards retirement. They want to be where the action is, and they want to be close to their families. So what do they want? They don't want to travel. They don't want to retire to the beach or the mountains, no matter what it is that HGTV says. They want to travel forever, except they're probably not going to be able to, and they don't really, most of them these days, don't really like seniors-only communities. What they really want is to be near the action or accessible to the action. They want to be close to family, and believe you me, the first time there's a major health problem, the whole impact, the importance of family comes into bright focus. They want easy access to medical facilities. They want a single-story home with no steps, an open plan, and some nice amenities. So how can assistive technology help? You can focus on in-home improvements. How do people live? What can you do to help them? You want them to maintain a normal quality of life. The big issues have to do with mobility, sight, hearing, cognitive difficulties, such as not being able to remember why you came into the room, or getting lost when you're just in the block. Big issue, as I said, is transportation, and they want some social opportunities. These are some examples of assistive devices that are not high-tech. These are available frequently for a buck or two, and I used to have an online store where I sold these things. The single best seller was a peephole in the door. The second biggest seller was This right here, non-skid socks. They're comfortable. They're wonderful. You don't have to wear shoes. You put them on, and you're not going to slip and fall. They're about $2 a pair. That's not high tech. This up here happens to be a suction cup on this end that helps you. If you don't have a grab bar, you can use one of these things near a toilet or a place where you have to get up off something. Here are some examples of storage solutions. This is a pull-down lever. You pull on this lever and the whole closet bar comes down towards you. Here happens to be an assist to get into your shoes. Here happens to be something that will help you lift a hanger that you can no longer reach. This one, believe it or not, is extremely useful for people who forget that they have things on the stove because the mirror is mounted at an angle so that you can see what's at the back here. Here is an example of something that will help you put on your socks if you can't bend over enough. These happen to be furniture risers. One of the great learning lessons from my coming home from surgery was that I couldn't get off and out of my couch as easily as I used to. And the reason is that it was 3 inches too low for my thighs. In other words, my butt was sitting too low for me to easily leverage myself out of it. A furniture riser makes all the difference in the world. These are available from Target for, what, 10, 15 bucks, something like that? You had a question?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you where you can get them because I bought them
at Bed Bath & Beyond. Now they don't have it. Target used to. Google is your friend. Look them up. Call them furniture risers. You will also have to sort out the kind of furniture riser that consists of a chair with a platform that levers you out. But these are called furniture risers. Here is a cane with a three-prong tip. If you've ever tried to use a cane to maintain balance, you've discovered that it's only a one point, and it's really hard to balance sometimes. But with three, you have a better sense of balance. Oops. Oop, too much. This one happens to have a little seat here, so that if you need to stand in line for a movie or tickets for something or stand in line to get your driver's license renewed, you can bring along your own cane and just open it up into a little seat. This is another pull-down device for getting clothes. This is a toothbrush for people who cannot necessarily... I think it's a comb. For people... For instance, I had shoulder surgery, and I cannot raise my hand any more than this, which means there is no way that I can comb this side of my hair or the back of my head. With this device, I could because it reaches for me. This is a two-handled tumbler for people who don't necessarily have all that firm a grip on things. This one is called the Easy Reacher. I love them. For those of you who get shorter as you get older, and you will, 2 to 3 inches, by the way, those upper cupboards are going to be unreachable. This lets you get the jar of tomato sauce off the top shelf. And this one is my favorite. You all know about these things. They're on rails. They're baskets on rails. They are cheap. They are affordable. They install with nothing more expensive than a screwdriver. And they make all the difference in the world. Everybody has had the closet underneath the countertop, where you have to get down on your hands and knees and reach way back for something that you put in the closet 2 years ago and now you want. Except that you can't reach without falling over and hurting yourself. This brings the items to you instead of you having to go fishing back into that dark corner where whatever it was that you want may have now grown teeth and claws. What did I just do? Okay, how do I get it back? Okay, we're done. I mean, I don't want to be done, but we are done. Can you wait just a little bit longer? I only have a few more slides. It is on the front of this. There we go. Okay. All right. There is a huge opportunities with cell phones coming up. Oh, by the way, you should know that 88% of the people who are 65 and older have some form of mobile device, and of those mobile devices, the vast majority are cell phones. However, only 7% of them are smartphones. However, One of the nice things about cell phones and smartphones is that they have apps being written for them on an astounding basis. Look in the near future for things like devices that will attach to your cell phone that will automatically take your blood pressure, your heartbeat, measure your respiration, maybe measure your blood chemistry, maybe take a look at your blood sugar, and automatically report it to your doctor, whoever you say, so that the only time you need to go to the doctor is when those measurements look like they're kind of out of whack, at which point the doctor will call you and say, I think we need to see you. Wouldn't that be better than scheduling an office visit every other month just for a checkup so the doctor can say, yay, verily, you're good, out of here. Okay. I'm out of time.
If you have a little bit more to wrap up, that would be okay.
That's about it. It will be telling if you ever sit down at a bunch of seniors and just ask them what's going on, and then watch how they interact. One thing that could very, very much inform your projects is to find a need and fill it. And don't be surprised if your research is out of date next year. And that, I believe, is it. Oh, yeah. All right. Thank you very much. I will answer any questions. You can leave now, but I will be here to answer questions.
You know, we're all going to be seniors, hopefully, so it's all applies to all of us. Be sure to sign up attendance for the tour next Tuesday. You need a Room 36 pass, and take a cookie.
Thank you.